The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Find me with me today, Jeremy Schilling at JTSchill20. What an exciting series against the Houston Astros. They get Carlos Correa back. They don't have a way of, you know, cheating their way to victory here. It's been eventful. It's been so good. You know, I absolutely love seeing Framber just completely fall apart. But what's your initial reaction to not only that game, but the whole series?
So my initial reaction is, man, I'm starting to love this baseball team. Like I've been so hesitant to be all in because I just felt like they were going to break our hearts. But this is starting to be like a major league where they're winning despite the ownership. You know, if you've seen that movie, it's one of my all-time favorite, certainly sports movies. But my initial take here is the last time we were on the show, Charlie, we were doing the trade deadline recap. Absolutely. And one of the things I mentioned towards the end is we'll see how the team responds, right? Right. And how about, yes, I am Big John Studd. I am. You're right.
Yeah.
and they come out and they sweep a good baseball team. So what does that tell us about the clubhouse's reaction to the deadline and our perception that they failed to add to the team? That's not what the roster felt. They felt like they have a good group. And
right
now that the pressure's off, is, you know, is Toro going to be sent down? Is Abreu going to be moved? Duran moved? Who's going to be in the rotation? Guess what? They got answers that they're all staying. And this is the response we get. I mean, I couldn't be more excited for the last 2 months of this season. With all that said, they'll probably break my heart in some unimaginable fashion. But as of today, I'm just totally ecstatic. The other thing with today's game is not only are they beating a good team, but they're beating a good pitcher. You know, yeah. They found a way to beat, you know, this is a game we shouldn't have lost. You look at the game, if you're a gambler like me, you're looking at the game before it starts. You're like, man, I just don't see a path to victory here. And then that inning happens. And I know Framber essentially puked on himself with the 2 pass balls and the error that he committed on a ball that Abreu bunted on a one hop right back to him. I think most pitchers field that, and it's a non-issue. But they hit. Giolito was absolutely fantastic, except for the fastball down the middle to Correa. They continue to play defense. Bregman was unbelievable. Story. Rafaela, all making the plays we expect them now to make on a day-to-day basis. They're making them, man. This team is a lot of fun to watch, and I can't wait for tomorrow night.
Yeah, I mean, Framber is almost a lock. When I was talking about this with Doug and Nick, I said, you know, we're going to win game two. We're probably going to lose game three. And it's because Framber is Framber. I've personally never seen Framber completely fall apart like that ever. You know, it's been, since early May when he's allowed three runs, then it was four runs. It hasn't happened since the beginning of the year. And then five runs and then six runs. I had to go back to see, has this ever happened before? Framber Valdez allowed seven runs on May 20th, 2024. It's been over a year since he's got rocked that bad. And every pitcher is going to have a blip like that. But that was our first Red Sox sweep of the Astros since 2013. That's pretty sweet. Why? It's Houston. That's one. Two, I hate them, so it's doubly special for me. But a couple of other fun statistics. You know, like you mentioned earlier, this is a team that we felt collectively didn't get the pieces we need. We didn't get Joe Ryan. We didn't get, you know, possibly Dylan Cease. We didn't get another bat. Eugenio Suarez didn't join, or Yandy Diaz, anything like that. The Red Sox have the best record in baseball since June 28th. We're 21-8. We're a half game better than the Brewers. We're a game better than the Blue Jays. And then the Marlins, surprisingly enough, are in there along with the Rangers. Who's not in there? The Dodgers, they've been getting their clock cleaned. The Braves, they're not there. The Seattle Mariners, they're not there. Detroit Tigers, they're not there. Yankees, not there. And then there's another graphic that they were sharing, and I love stats because numbers don't lie. As far as the Red Sox rotation for their starters, right? This year, they have a 4.03 ERA. One of the biggest issues we've had is not having guys that can go six innings. All of a sudden now, we're getting guys that are going six plus, seven plus. Giolito today, eight. Probably would have finished it off if they gave him the ball. I mean, he was just absolutely locked in. Only once in the last 5 years have we been in the top 15, and that was in 2024. Outside of that, we've been 17th or worse. Right now, we're 16th, and we're trending upwards. But 2022, 2023, we were 22nd out of 30. And then one more fun stat, and this is going to be someone that I'm going to give you kudos for, because everyone else wanted to DFA him, and that's Trevor Story. Trevor Story is leading Major League Baseball with RBI since June 1st. He's got more RBIs than Cal Raleigh, more RBIs than Shohei Ohtani, more RBIs than Salvi Perez, who's also turned it up, Riley Green, who's one of the best players in baseball, and then Taylor Ward, who's been a surprise in LA. He's got 46. The next closest guy, it's a three-way tie. You got Riley Green, you got Cal Raleigh, and then you've got Nick Hertz, who's just blowing everything away in Oakland, all at 44. We cannot say enough about Trevor Story being a very smart baseball hitter, not trying to swing for the fences every single time. Every once in a while, obviously, he's going to run into one. But how many times have we seen him go oppo where it's just a single or a double and he's driving in runs? He's doing everything we need for where he is in the lineup. Is he a three or four hitter? No. Wherever he is, please keep him there. The order of the lineup continues to move and shift, but he's on pace for his best year possibly ever.
Yeah, Randy just put in the comments, he's on pace for 99 RBIs.
Yeah.
He's a streaky player. He's a streaky player. And my take on Story earlier in the season when everyone was calling for his head was it's just completely unrealistic to think that the club was going to eat the entire contract and DFA him. So the move to me was a phantom IL. They wound up having to do it. And, you know, he's a big part of why this team's finding success. It doesn't surprise me that he's finding more and more consistency both field because he hasn't played. So here he is. He's playing every day. We're, you know, 110 games in or whatever it is. Not surprising to see that he's becoming the player we all thought he could be when he signed the contract. His defense is between him, Rafael Bregman. I mean, you hit it to those three guys and it's an automatic out.
Right. While Jeremy's coming back in, that wasn't the only thing that went in. So Jeremy will rejoin in a moment. So there we go. Jeremy's back. So Jeremy, go ahead and finish your thought.
Yeah, I was just saying, I mean, he's playing more. He's playing consistently. He hasn't played for years on end. And so it's not surprising that a guy of his caliber find a way to be more consistent, both at the plate and in the field. You know, as bad as this team has been defensively, and they've been bad, but, you know, at least as of Friday, we were tied with the Rockies, who's like historically bad team defensively. Mm-hmm. If you hit it the third short or center field, you're out. If you move Rafael to second, then, you know, I mean, it changes the where the elite defense is, but it's up the middle defense has been great, you know, and it's not just balls at him. I mean, they, you know, they are making all sorts of plays on balls that some guys don't get to. So it's been fun to watch. I'm happy for the player. You know, you sign a big contract, you're going to get a lot of pressure on you. And he's, as right. of right now in 2025, he's can't ask for more.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you. And here's the thing, because we're going to have a couple of people commenting, me possibly going overboard here. Here's the facts, guys. If you guys haven't been paying attention, you haven't been watching the Red Sox play, you just faced the Dodgers, you faced the Houston Astros, and in those nine games, you went 7-2. You beat the Dodgers. They're arguably one of the best teams in baseball, if not the best. You just beat the Houston Astros. Both teams are leading the West, AL West and NL West. You went 5-1 against those teams. Luck maybe would get you one win, not five. We're 8-2 over our last 10. We are the hottest team in baseball right now. Can we keep this up? You know, no team's going to go 800 for the rest of the year. That's insane. But we're doing a little bit better than I think a lot of us thought we were going to do. We have a couple of interesting games. I'm going to try to go see one of the San Diego games next week. But like you said, this is an exciting time. Like, ride the high while we have it. The starters are doing well. I want to believe they're doing the right thing with Dustin May by not having had him start today, because who knows what would have happened. Maybe this would have been a one-run game, and maybe we don't try those small ball, you know, ideas and bring that kind of methodology back, because this didn't feel like anything analytics-driven at all. With the amount of bunting I saw in this game and trying to get on base and bunting towards first base, because obviously Framber's a left-handed pitcher. He's not going to throw and then go towards first base. That's not going to happen. We did those things that were smart, and it's fun to see. The only mistake that I can really honestly say was just Abraham Toro got caught in that pickle between first and second, eventually was thrown out trying to take second base. But
he was going first move. He was going first move.
You know, he took a chance. It didn't work out. Exactly. That's it. It wasn't like you're caught in between second and third dawdling, like, should I tag up or not? It wasn't like a dumb move like that. You took a chance. It didn't work out. It's happened before. It has worked out. It just didn't this time around. I'm very, very happy with what's happened. And more importantly, there's a couple of other things. We had the most taxed bullpen, I don't know how many innings, at the beginning of the year. Bernardino was getting burned. Weissert was getting burned. Chapman was being used a little bit. Whitlock was getting used for double innings. I mean, it was getting bad because your starters weren't going five innings. They're getting cracked after four, or they're getting, you know, unfortunately for Walker Buehler, got tossed in one game for arguing a location on one pitch, which I don't blame him. It was just bad umping that day. But now you have starters doubling up. Instead of three plus innings, they're going six plus, seven plus. It really has changed the dynamic of this team. You're not putting any pressure on your relievers, or a lot less pressure. You're giving them minimum 1-2 days rest in between appearances. I don't feel bad when I'm seeing certain names pop up, because I know there's probably a day of rest in between appearances, you know, unless it's Chappie coming out for back-to-back save opportunities. And he was throwing 101 the last appearance. I mean, he just flat out embarrassed Houston. Embarrassed them. This whole team just looked overmatched in all the wrong ways, and it was great to see.
The one thing that came out of the deadline is the bullpen depth at the same time deeper into game, because Bernardino is on a 13 appearance streak without an earned run, and he's in Worcester right now, which he's not going to be down. I would expect to be on the playoff roster. But I think it goes to show you that.
I'm just going to wait for Jeremy to come back in again. So there's a couple of things, obviously, that's going to happen. And I think that the rest of this month are going to dictate what's going to happen with this team. You have a lot of really, really important games that you need to do really, really well again. So if you were to take a look at the Boston Red Sox just for the remainder of the month, You've got Kansas City. You got Bayo, Crochet, and May. I think we take two of those three. Then against the San Diego Padres, you've got Buehler, Giolito, and then Bayo again. I think you're going to take two of those three again. And you're just going to ride the train, because then you get Houston again and you get Crochet one more time. So this is going to be a really, really fun next probably 9-10 games. Jeremy, go ahead, back in. We're just talking really quickly about the schedule for the next 9-10 games. And there are a couple of comments that I'd like to touch up on in a moment. But go ahead, finish up where you were going a moment ago.
Yeah, sorry about that. I switched internet, so it should have resolved the issue. I was so annoyed by the internet, by the way. I forgot what I was saying, so my bad.
No, you're quite right. Well, really quickly, we pivoted because we were talking about a starting pitcher in Worcester and where he was.
Oh, Bernardino. Yeah, I mean, that just goes to the bullpen depth. I mean, this team is getting healthy. They're being asked to do less. And with the trade deadline addition of Steven Matz, that, you know, it's, you know, they have help in Worcester that they'll rely on. I think, like I said, I don't know where I cut off, but Bernardino, I think is going to be on the playoff roster. So I don't exactly know why he's down in Worcester, but give him some rest. I don't expect him to pitch much for them. Maybe every 3 or 4 days just to stay sharp, not go beyond 15 pitches. And it's a great sign. As long as this rotation can stay healthy and continue to do what they're doing. And here's the other thing with the way they're playing right now. We're on a little 5-game heater, and they, during that period of time, they take Crochet and they push him back into the Kansas City series. So he's getting some rest. He's able to take some time down, hopefully not pick up a baseball for a few days, and yet we're still winning. Right. You know, this team before the July hot streak, the only, you know, chance to win it felt like was when Garrett Crochet was pitching, and he hasn't even pitched this week. So right play by Cora. I said it earlier in the year. I was a proponent of potentially skipping starts, although they didn't feel the need to do that. The pushback move is an underrated move to keep a guy healthy, especially because he leads the American League in innings pitched. So the fact that we're still winning, you go in, he pitches in this Kansas City series. So you think you're going to win that game. You find a way to win in one of the other two and you win another series. So, you know, things breaking right here for the Sox, man.
Absolutely. So this comment right here coming from Boston Maniacs, little play on words there from Maine folks podcast. Sox will be first in the AL East by the end of August. That's possible if you can start dominating. You've got three and a half game difference between you and Toronto. Toronto was one of the more fun teams. Now this is kind of turning out to be one of those really fun teams because you don't have any of these 38, 39 year old leaders, and that's no disrespect to some of our pitchers that are there. You know, obviously Chapman is one of the big names in that bullpen, but you know, you see Brekke in there. Brekke's like he's my age. He's like in his mid-30s. You know, he's not almost done. He's got a couple of years left, and he's done something that we haven't had in a really long time, which is take those rookies underneath the wing and say, okay, cool, let's take a look at this at bat. And he was doing this when he wasn't playing, and he's doing it when he is playing. It's really cool to see him bond with Roman Anthony. It's really cool to see him bonding with Garrett Crochet, who also hasn't been in the league all that long. And he has established himself as one of those major leaders in that clubhouse. I don't think it can be taken for granted. I don't remember that kind of leadership since JD Martinez was there kind of helping some of the rookies out. David Ortiz was helping some of the rookies out. I don't remember if Manny did that with some of the younger guys. I don't think so. If he did, I apologize. But This is a team that's actually very exciting. I said this once before. I find myself getting really excited for the pregame show just to hear and learn something new. So Cooper Criswell got, you know, sent down after a 7-inning performance. His only start of the season, 7 innings, allowed 1 run, and that's it. Bernardino had a perfect month in the sense of not allowing any runs. He had a blip last month where he allowed a run minimum in 4 straight appearances, and then after that, 1 blippy appearance. After that, pretty much perfect. Right. I've been a proponent of, you know, not having Bernardino. I was okay with sending him back down. Maybe just needs a refresher, get some time away, come back. Because just because, as you mentioned, we've got the depth in the minors, just because you've been sent down does not mean that you're not coming back up. Injuries happen. If you absolutely go on a heater, you're going to get the opportunity to come back up. This is probably the most fun team right now because of the rookies.
Well, fun stat dropped in by Ray, a friend of the program, a loyal listener. We that The last time the Red Sox were 11 games over 26, 2022, 1,100 plus days ago. Fun stat. Yeah. So, I mean, look, it's hard not to be optimistic right now. Again, you got Crochet in the next series. I know we're going to talk about that series that towards the end of the podcast, but I mean, look, there's some ancillary miscellaneous things to talk about. Toro is starting to look like a big league first baseman from a defensive perspective. He had a really underrated play where he held the bag, but had to fall towards right field to hold the bag and catch a ball. He's becoming way more consistent at scooping low throws. Romy Gonzalez made a play in the first today that's prevented a run. He dove essentially into right field glove side and got up and with plenty of time. He didn't, I think, have to do this, but from a knee throughout the runner by like 10 feet. You know what you're going to get in Abreu. Roman Anthony's been consistent defensively. Duran got the day off today. Yeah, so there's another aspect. Duran's getting some rest. We still win. And you know, I've said this for probably a season and a half or longer. We kind of go as he goes. I don't know if it's true anymore because, you know, Roman gets on base 40% of the time. I mean, he's a problem. You know, it's just Wong contributed.
That his second sack fly of the year.
Two RBIs, doubled up on his RBI total today with the sack fly. But, I mean, look, at the end of the day, he's facing one of the best players, the pitchers in the bigs.
Right.
Yeah. And I know it wasn't a key play in the game, but it's a good sign that he hit that ball well enough to get out to right field, allow both runners to advance. It was second, right, third, I believe, at the time. Both runners advance, and that runner that advanced the third ultimately scored.
Right. So
we could pick fun of it. We could pick fun at his run production, but today, I mean, he contributed.
So I'm going to say this, and I apologize for cutting you off. Any other right-handed hitter for the Red Sox right now, with that swing and that reaction, I would have been like, that's gone. But Connor Wong, I was like, no, it's not going. That's going to be a sack fly. So I apologize to Connor Wong for that if he hears this. But I was just like, you know what? I'm happy he got another RBI here. Couple other things. I can't downplay how incredible the defense was in this game. Bregman was like a man incensed at the hot corner. That very last play, too, was just the culmination of everything leading up to this. You know, crazy plays. Digging deep, going into foul territory, that ball's bouncing and still throwing absolute missiles to first to get multiple runners out. I mean, he's not throwing out, you know, David Hamilton every single time, but miscellaneous speeds. He's being smart. Romy also with a really good play at second base, that like double pump or pump before throw. We got a nice play there too. Seidon Rafaela tried getting that ball in center field and prevented a triple just by getting up quick, firing that ball back in there. And I also want to talk about something else. The Red Sox are completely comfortable playing uncomfortably. Playing center field at Fenway Park, doing an interview, hard. Playing center field, doing an interview or being mic'd up and doing it in a foreign language, even harder. So I want to take a moment to say how much I commend Seidon Rafaela for being able to do this in not his first language. I say that because English was not my first language. So it was pretty special to, some people don't know that. So it was pretty special and pretty cool to hear that. And I felt bad for him that there was some technological issues happening for him, but he was still able to answer all the questions clearly without problems. And obviously no translator on there, just absolutely owned it. And, you know, you have to give him credit. Like it's got to be uncomfortable sometimes answering questions you may not be prepared for or ready for. And he was able to do it with such grace. Where would you want to play? Would you play second or center? It doesn't matter. I'm just happy to play. And the question about handling the triangle too, I know it's there. So I figure like if it's there, I got to make that catch. He's answering everything just like a kid having fun would. It felt like a job and fun. Like, I don't think he looks at his paycheck every 2 weeks or every month or every week or however the ball players get paid. Like, this is just, it's just fun all around. And honestly, you could mic him up once a week. He's going to be one of the more listened to players. And honestly, I'll be shocked if this doesn't become one of the most popular jersey owners or owned jerseys in, you know, as a member of the Red Sox in 2025 and beyond.
Yeah. So on the interview itself, and I know this wasn't Dave O'Brien's plan. It was the the producer.
Sure.
But they have him in the middle of the game. There's no way to show him the clip, and they want to ask him about a play he made on May 8th without telling him who the team was. Like, they didn't set it up. It's like, hey, if you remember in early May against this team, and this is where the ball was hit. They were just like, you know, you made this great play where you banged up against the wall, and I wonder if that hurt. And he's like, I can't watch the play. It's like, what kind of interview are we doing here?
And he Jules's still owned point, it with grace.
He did. He handled it very well. I mean, he was honest. He didn't try to sugarcoat it and like, oh yeah, it was, and like kind of comment on a play he wasn't recalling. But it just goes for me. I would rather get that interview when, like, let's say he makes the last out in the inning in the dugout while the team's hitting. You know what I mean? You can have a production person in the dugout with an iPad. If you want to show him a play, here's the play. So to Jules's comment, no game interviews, in-game interviews, I don't necessarily disagree with you. And I'm still waiting for a ball in play to be affected by a guy doing an interview where it's like smoked at him and he gets a bad jump, you know?
Oh, so I have seen it.
So my take there is just go interview him from the dugout, please. Like, not in the field. I don't have any. And then obviously the technology was absolutely brutal. But to get back to Rafaela, you know, and this is in the context of the whole Devers fiasco where he didn't want to do anything that didn't directly benefit Rafael Devers, even though he's on a $300 million deal. And that's the only thing I'll say about Devers. Okay. It's so refreshing to have the modern professional athlete be as unselfish as Rafaela appears to be. Any athlete that's willing to put himself out in the spotlight, whether it's the language barrier or not, it's not relevant to me. It's the fact that he makes himself accessible to the fans. And so we get to hear post-game interviews after he hits the game-winning home run or makes the big play. The more we hear from these players, especially a guy with his personality, the more he is going to endear himself to the fan base. And from my perspective, the more likable they become. And that's not to say that he's already likable because of the effort he has on the field and his ability to impact the game with his glove. It's really, really fun to watch. I love the player. And, you know, one of the things we talked about last year on this podcast, Charlie, was the deal that he signed. Was it a good deal? No one's talking about that anymore. That was the right thing to do. He's locked up. He's going to be a Red Sox for many, many years. And he's going to continue to get better at the plate. So who knows where he ends up being. I wasn't me who said this, but I agreed with it. He's a potential 3,100 guy. Now, I don't think he's going to do it year in and year out, but would it surprise me in 2026 or 2027 or whatever for him to be a gold glove defender and hit 30 and 100 RBIs? It would not surprise me. He's got that upside.
I honestly, so it may not be 2026 that he does it, right? If you have to look at his numbers right now, and I apologize because I'm not looking at them in front of me, but he's at 16 homers, 50 RBIs.
I'd have to look it up.
Let me look it up, actually, since now we're talking about Sadon. He's at 14 home runs, 50 RBIs before today. So, yeah, I definitely think that there's the potential for something like that to happen for Sadon. You know, he got his 50th RBI today. I do have a concern, though, about 2027, and that's the CBA, and that's going to be the next lockout, and it's going to be a real damn shame if we lose out on any specified amount of time. You know, if we have 1994 all over again, you're missing out on important baseball from Roman Anthony, from Marcelo Meyer, from Sadon Rafaela, from Will Urabreu, Garrett Crochet. I mean, all these big names in Boston, like, this couldn't happen at a worse time. And we're not the only team that could potentially, have the devastating disaster effect from it. But I really hope that they're able to come to some kind of agreement, because then it's going to feel like COVID, where the whole season's basically gone because we can't come to agreement. You know, the MLBPA and the owners can't, you know, understand that the most important thing is, you know, the game itself. And I understand the owners care about money too, but, you know, if we lose out on a month of baseball or 2 months of baseball, it's going to be like the COVID year. 100 game season is not going to feel the same. It's going to feel like a flawed product that year.
We were having fun, and then you have to talk about a lot.
You know, it's looming. They said that the sides are very far, far apart, and we're the most real Sox podcast and probably baseball podcast. Like, where we're talking about things that necessarily, you know, are not fun, but we're gonna mix the fun with the not fun.
So, for any baseball fan living in a shelter the last week, Rob Manfred about 2 weeks ago went into the Phillies clubhouse and tried to have a discussion about non-guaranteed contracts being a part of baseball. And apparently Bryce Harper got into his face on it and essentially verbally kicked him out of the locker room. So obviously it's a tense thing. You know, right. I fall in the, there's just so much money at stake.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's the business side of it, running the risk of angering your marketing partners. You know, long-term people that are going to say, I'm not going to sit around and wait for you guys to figure this out. Here, my marketing money is going to go away. So I'd like to think that cooler heads will prevail. Each side gives a little bit and maybe neither side's super happy. But I also don't think Major League Baseball thinking they're going to get rid of guaranteed contracts, that's going to take like missing a season. That's what's going to have to happen for you to get rid of something like that. And I just don't think it's going to happen. But
right.
Jesus, Charlie, I can't believe you went negative on me. I was so happy.
Here, speaking of happy, let's get happy, right? We're not going to get toasted on the show. But what was your impression about yesterday's game? And I want to talk about Hector Neris for a second.
Yeah,
that was,
I have thoughts on this.
That was so unexpected. So I'll zip it. I'll let you go first.
Yeah, he's just a giant bitch. I mean, I hate to say it any other way, and I know you don't love cursing. I don't think that technically is a curse. I think you can say
no,
that.
No, it's not. It's
by 98.5, the Sports Hub rules, I'm okay here.
You are clean.
Look, you don't want to have an issue with tipping your pitches. Don't tip your pitches, you jackass. And then when you're going to go up to the third base coach, and who's a 50-year-old man, and you're going to physically threaten him, you're just a giant bitch. I mean, I'm sorry. Just get people out and shut up. And if you can't, be a professional about it. You're not going to go pick on another player. You're essentially picking on somebody that could be a grandfather. Like, get over yourself. Who do you think you are? You know, and that blew my mind. I mean, what? Just a giant. He's just soft. And you try to act like a tough guy. I'm sorry. I hate the play. I'm glad it's not something I've seen from our players, because I would take the same position. You don't want to tip your pitches. Figure it out. Shuffle your glove, regardless of whether you're changing your grip or not, and then you don't know what's coming. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, so that happened. The play in question was, Hector Neris is walking off the mound, doesn't get the play he wants. Kyle Hudson's the third base coach for the Red Sox. He's actually, surprisingly enough, he's close to our age. He's 38. I actually didn't know that. I thought
the third base coach is?
Third base coach, 38 years old. Yeah.
So he's
I know, he looks a little different. Anyways, real quick about that. What's disappointing and rich about this is that the Houston Astros went down with having one of the worst cheating scandals. Some of our former, our current players and current coaches were on that team when it happened. Who was the mastermind behind it? No one's ever going to be able to prove it was one specific person. At this point, I think everyone's got to share a lot of blame here. But what a gutless thing to do. You're concerned about another team cheating? I mean, I have to keep myself reserved as the host of the show, but how pathetic was that? That was so rich to see Hector Neris, who, by the way, is not even that good anymore. He's had a couple of good years, and this just isn't one of them. And then he ended up intentionally balking the runner to third. But I'm like, you guys are playing with no punch right now. That's how you're going to try to fire up your team? I just thought it to be so dumb. And then I thought, when Framber hit Rafaela and there was no response, that was the Boston Red Sox saying, you will not beat us. You will not get a rise out of us. You can keep playing cheap baseball. It won't work. And the Astros...
You thought that was intentional?
That was today, not yesterday, but...
I think it was intentional?
I think it could have been. It could have been. Rafaela didn't say a thing. No, if you saw Cora's face, he wasn't happy about it, obviously protecting his players. But I mean, you got to wonder, you got to think, was that intentional? The guy who's somewhat embarrassed your team a little bit over the last couple of days, it didn't look good. And truth be told, I didn't like it, but just more fuel.
So I think he was intentionally trying to come in off the plate. I think he was trying to back him off the plate a little bit and it happened to hit him. I don't think he was like aiming for the shoulder blade, which is where he got him. But the thing that I love about that response is once he realized he was okay, he just flipped off his guard and dropped his bat and ran to first base. Like a right. professional response, the exact opposite right. of what we're talking about, which is you're projecting onto the other team for your own failures. You know, I don't expect Rafael to be the type of person to drop his bat and run to the mound. No. And nor do we want that, because then you know, in today's world and today's landscape of baseball, you go start a fight, you're going to miss 5 to 7 games. And that's right. Rafael's way too important to be doing stuff like that. So there's no fake tough guy stuff. There's no staring them down. It's just a professional. Let's go to first base and move on with this thing. Let's not make it a deal. That's one of the things I like about this team. And I think it's a direct reflection of the way that Story and Bregman play the game. So the other guys that are behind leadership, of which I count Rafaela, they just follow suit. Let's just go to the next pitch, next play, next at bat. And so I think that's part of why this team's finding success right now.
The Houston Astros made one more addition than the Red Sox did. The Red Sox picked up two pitchers, one starter, one reliever. Got Dustin May, got Steven Matz. Returns or whatever, does not matter. The Houston Astros got Carlos Correa from Minnesota. They got Ramon Urias from the Baltimore Orioles. And then they got Jesus Sanchez from the Marlins. When you think about the pieces that was supposed to make the Houston Astros better, and the fact that you only saw one of the pieces that made the Red Sox better, you got to think, man, that's brutal if you're Houston. Your only damage came off of one pipeline shot. And truth be told, if you throw that pitch there and that was really Giolito's only mistake, you've got to hit that ball hard. And he did. He hit it for a solo home run. There was no question about it. You got to wonder the state of Houston right now. Like, obviously, this is not the Houston Astros that we're going to be seeing for the remainder of the year. But I think there's a little bit of cause for concern there. Framber didn't do great. He's not going to do that again. He's not going to have a 6-run blip again, back-to-back times. That's never happened to him. You almost got to wonder, like, if you're Houston and you just saw the Red Sox make a minor pitching addition in the bullpen and a minor pitching addition to the starting rotation, who still hasn't even played yet so he can get acclimated with the program in Boston, I think you got to be sitting there thinking, crap, did we get too much? Are we thinking that maybe we did, you know, we didn't get the right pieces? I don't know. I'm not sure what Houston is thinking, but I'm sure they're a little bit concerned.
Yeah. I mean, the guys that run baseball teams don't think like that. Right now we have a show to do today, as the Sports Hub loves to say. And so we have to talk about this series, this game, this moment, that inning, this start. But when you take a look back, and I wouldn't be surprised at all as we go towards October, that the Red Sox have issues as a result of where the roster is currently constructed versus the Astros. I think the Astros are potentially going to be in the ALCS. So, right. I mean, they have great pitching, and I know we beat it, but I don't know that this result is what we would expect from another series against them in as we get into late September. I think they're built well. The Sox are playing well right now. And the thing, you know, that's more, but the way I look at this particular series, it was more about Boston than it was about Houston. Houston did some of the things we were doing in April and May, kicking the ball all over the place, you know, making stupid fundamental mistakes. And then we were kind of avoiding it. I know we had two errors yesterday, but we're kind of avoiding it, where the Trevor Story play at the plate. And that's such an underrated play. He squared his shoulders to Narvaez while in the air. There's only right. two people in my, well, maybe Bregman can make that play, but like, that's a special play. Like,
right.
Rafael has got that type of athleticism where he can do stuff like that. But like, Story's ability to be fundamentally sound while being very athletic in that moment, game on the line, play at the plate, and we win the game because of it. And we're also situationally hitting, you know, you mentioned bunting earlier. I would love, and I haven't listened to the post game yet today. Maybe I'll turn the radio on at the gym and see if I can get some. Somebody's got to ask Cora. You know, about 10 days ago, we saw our first bunt. It seems like all year. And now we're seeing a bunt.
Right.
What's been the shift from your perspective running the team from the clubhouse? Have you been freed up from the ethics a little bit here and to based on the eye test and who's the matchup? Right. Because I'm here for Alex managing like that, because we're going to be, and we are, situationally much better.
Absolutely. So let's shift over to this upcoming series, and it's going to be an interesting one. We obviously were talking about Kansas City. We've got Bayo going up against Bailey Falter. Bayo has gone a quality start 10 of his last 11 times. Since June 3rd, only one time has he not gone six innings. He's gone the full distance once, but he's going consistently six plus. So in relation to Bailey over here, Bailey Falter, not really giving you quality starts, but I'm going to go ahead and just say, I think Red Sox are going to win the series here, and we're going to win game one. Between Falter and Bayo, who do you have?
I mean, look, I don't know how. And by the way, for reference, I picked the Royals to win the pennant this year. Looks like I'm going to be wrong there. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, to me, it's more about the way we're playing right now. It feels like that way all year. It's always about us. It's not the other team. It's we're the one booting the ball, running into outs. Right now, we're just playing good baseball. The Sox are playing good baseball. Cora's managing more to win every game, it feels like. And you get Crochet in the series. So I do think they're going to win the series because I think they're going to win the Crochet start. And Bayo has been, you know, battling, I think, with Giolito for who's going to get the ball in game two of a playoff series if we can get there. And Giolito was awesome today. I expect Bayo to give you a chance to win. The concern for me is Witt Jr. He's an absolute game wrecker. It's not unlike when you're facing the Yankees and how you have to deal with Judge. If you can avoid Witt Jr. being a problem, being on the bases, causing stressful pitches, up the pitch count, like those sorts of things, I like our chances to win. I think we're going to hit. And I'll take Bayo in game one for sure.
Yeah, there's no way I'm picking against Bayo. You know, there's just no way. And I'm just going to very quickly move into the second one. Your second set of pitchers, you've got Garrett Crochet, lock, against Ryan Burgert, who just came from San Diego. This is as much of a putt from 2 inches away as I've seen. And sure, I could be completely wrong. It could happen. But now you're seeing Garrett Crochet pitch, and he's going six, seven innings, and he's allowing one or two runs, but he's getting support. He's actually getting four or five runs a game as opposed to only one or two. And what I'm talking about is, you look at everything from June 1st on. Guess how many losses he has? Guess how many no decisions he has?
I'm going to go with two no decisions, one loss.
You're right on the no decisions. We're going to pretend you cut out for losses. You're absolutely right. Two no decisions and no losses. The man is 8-0 in 10 appearances. He's improved from 4-4 to 12-4. His ERAs for those months, 2.9 and 1.73. He's absolutely on fire. Now, when you think about those last 2 months in relation to the first two plus months, you're seeing him allow one or two runs, same as he's doing right now. But instead of the team only giving him one, two, maybe three runs of support, you're seeing 10, you're seeing 13, you're seeing six, four. You're seeing a lot more. You're seeing almost like double that, right? So that mixed in with the fact that Kansas City, not as hot of a team as the Red Sox are right now. I have absolutely no reason to believe that Crochet won't win another one, and he won't win his sixth game in a row.
Yeah, wins and loss for a starting pitcher, that's a team stat. I don't look at that. I don't, you know, to me, the fact that he's winning the games just goes to show you that as a team, we're playing better when he's pitching. But that's been the case for anyone that's been pitching. And the thing that's great to see is even if we do fall behind, earlier in the season, I'm ready to shut the game off. We're not coming back. Now it's like we're down two. Who cares? You know, down one. Who cares today? Down one. Who cares? We'll come right back and beat a good pitcher. So, yeah, I like us to win the series, certainly with Crochet's matchup on Tuesday.
Yeah, absolutely. And real quick, coming in from Randy Clemens over here, don't forget that Yaz returns to Fenway. That's right. We get another Yastrzemski coming back to Fenway Park. And every single time he comes up, I'm sure he's going to get a standing O. I would love for him to finish his career in Boston. To your credit, Jeremy, you were right. I don't remember you picking the Royals, but we actually ended up having three people pick the Royals. You did, Terry did, and Jason did. I was the only one that picked the Tigers, surprisingly enough. I thought everybody did. And then I picked the Red Sox. So your pennant pick against my pennant pick for the series. So this is going to be a fun one. The last one, we're going to see the debut of Dustin May. We're going to see what he can bring to the table here with the Red Sox. Honestly, all bets are off. He could either absolutely get tuned or he could light it up. I really think it's going to be one or the other. I don't think it's going to be in between. And he gets to face former Red Sox pitcher, Michael Wacha. Wacha has allowed one earned run in each of his last four starts, and he's gone 5+ in those starts. He's dropped his ERA from 3.83 all the way down to 3.38. He's 1-0 over his last four games. Who do you think wins that game?
I'll take the Royals, but here's what I'll say about it. One is we're going to get to Wacha. I don't know who those starts were against, but this offense is rolling. I also expect Bayo to pitch 6 or 7. I expect the same from Buehler. So if you get 4 good innings out of May, and let's say it's 2-1 entering the 5th inning, make it a bullpen game the rest of the way. The way this bullpen has not been used, key guys have rest. So, you know, I think if you can pull May with a positive result, even if it's a shorter start, and send it to the bullpen, I think they'll have every chance to win that game. It all comes down to whether or not he, you know, maybe he's too amped up and he's got good stuff and he's kind of all over the place. And, you know, he does the Red Sox first inning thing, which is, you know, still plagues us. It's the one thing I'd want to complain about, but yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say they're going to sweep the series. I don't think that's going to happen, but if you get a good start from Bayo, a good start from Crochet, that Wednesday game is, you know, that would be another 8-game winning streak, by the way.
Yeah, it would be. It would be fun.
So we're starting to talk in guarantees. Let's just hope they win the series, man.
So
I'm getting too far out over my ski pole.
You know, some people might think we're being too positive, like we're high or something. Anyone listening, don't do drugs. It's not healthy for you. Don't do it. So we don't want to say that we probably shouldn't make that joke. But Jeremy, as you're the only member of the podcast that I will allow to reserve the right to change your opinion, Everybody else can kick it. These are the last four appearances, because you said you weren't sure. Last four appearances against the Mets. 5 innings, 1 run, 2 hits, struck out 5, 3 walks. Good or bad team?
Good team.
I'd say good team, right? Marlins, next game. 1 run, 3 hits, 6 innings, 1 strikeout, 1 walk. Good or bad team?
Marlins are sneaky.
They're sneaky, right? They're sneaky. They've been good as of late, right?
And they're up, according to Randy. We haven't got an update. According to Randy, I think they're up 6-1 in the 5th. No, that was actually Jules' update. One of those guys.
They were up 6-1 in the middle.
Oh, they both, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So that's two, right? They've been sneaky good. Game 3, 1 run, 3 hits, 5 1/3, 5 punch outs, 1 walk, Cleveland Guardians.
Thought they'd be better, but they're not terrible.
No, not great, right? And then the last game, 1 run, 3 hits, 8 innings, 5 strikeouts. That run was a solo home run, Toronto Blue Jays.
Well, they're one of the best teams in baseball right now.
Period, right? So he's had probably 3 good appearances. He's had 3 good to great appearances against 3 good or great teams so far in 2025 over the last 4. That being said, I think that if the Red Sox are going to lose one of the 3, this is probably the one that they're going to lose. Now, if they're able to tune Wacha because they know what he can do, because there's some level of familiarity with him, I don't know if the Kansas City Royals are going to feel the same way about Dustin May being someone from the NL West, being from the Dodgers. Not everyone can get those pitchers tuned. I'm going to say this. Game 3 is probably the game that they lose if they lose a game. I will not be surprised if the Boston Red Sox sweep again. Could happen. I'm being positive about it because why the hell not?
Look, there's no reason not to be positive, as Jules is right in the comments trying to bring us back down to earth, and I get it. I'm just going to say they're going to find a way, because of the Crochet start in the middle, they're going to find a way to win this series.
Yeah. I mean, period. And you were
out of it up 12. You're going to be 1 or 2 games out of first place if that happens, potentially. Keep chipping away. Distance yourself from the Yankees. At the same time, try. And I know the Blue Jays are playing well, so just do what you can to try to catch the Blue Jays. I mean, I can't believe we're saying it, but the division's in play here.
Yeah. I did think in a million years, especially when 11 games behind was at one point the number we were chasing. Yeah. So what's the expression? You can't win a division in the first month of the year, but you can certainly lose it.
Yeah, you can't win a division in the first month of the year, but you certainly can lose it.
Well, they're turning the clock back and they're like, we just want to redo the season. And that's kind of what it feels like is happening. We've just cut 8 games off. It's incredible. So with that, That is going to do it for the Bastards. Go Red Sox. Again, if you're interested in reading any fun daily articles, bastardsofbostonbaseball.com is where to check us out. And naturally, if you want to interact with us on Twitter/X, you can find us there as well. Everyone have a great one. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.